Let's do it. It's a hump day here on RBKD. Today on the show, you got to win that game. The schedule's only going to get tougher. We get into the Texas loss against Kansas State. Cowboys, they have a lot of free agents. Who should they keep? Who should they just let go? Speaking of free agents, Texas looking at some people in the transfer portal. We'll give you those names, and they've got one of the best ever to do it on the 40, who's going to be taking his talents to the next level. He went from DB High to DBU, then took his talents to Detroit. He's in more private clubs than a swinger. He's as open-minded as anybody you're going to meet, yet doesn't like white condiments. He's a football theorist. He is an All-American. He is Rod Babers.
And my co-host, he's a lifetime Longhorn, but first and foremost, he is a lifetime Austinite. Like the great Bun B, he is a conservative liberal. He doesn't discriminate, which is why his dating history looks a lot like a commercial for the Rainbow Coalition. My man was a reality TV star before Urban Dictionary was a thing. And yes, he's only got one ball, but more testicular fortitude than you or your whole team. He is my co-host, my man, the estimable Kevin Dunn. What's going on, brother?
I'm doing great, doing great. Hope you enjoyed this weather here.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think it's really going to flip. I mean, I keep on saying this, and you know, I know Trey Elling's rolling his eyes somewhere, like we have this down to the hour. But it's going to happen tonight.
The weather guessers?
The weather guessers. It's going to be blowing in. But high of 40 tomorrow, low of 27.
It's not going to snow, is it? There's snow in the forecast.
Went from a warning to an advisory for winter weather. The warning's worse. There's less precipitation, basically. They're saying there won't be as much precipitation, so less sleet and less chances for bridges and everything freezing up.
Okay.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. No, it's still going to be cold, but there's less precipitation. Yeah.
That I can deal with.
There you go.
Especially after snowvid.
Yeah. Oh, no. We all have a little PTSD from that.
Because I used to want snow so bad. Patrick, you're probably like that. Rod, you're probably like that in Houston. I mean, we just didn't get snow. And
yeah.
It'd be in the winter and you're watching football games or you're watching Christmas movies.
You watch something, you see him make a snowman, and you're like, oh, I will never do that in this town.
Right.
Ever in my life.
Ever. And it sucked. We got one in 84. In 84 really came down, and then we just didn't get much. But last year was definitely the most I'd ever seen.
Got it.
But then you have to adult through it.
Yeah, you were too busy trying to survive and fend for your life.
Freezing your ass off.
So you really couldn't enjoy, making snowmen and sledding
down hills.
Have
we done anything about that?
No.
I don't believe so.
No, and I also found out last year there was a part where I walked out and I slipped in the snow. And then there was a giant fat guy imprint in the snow, but it didn't snow anymore. So just like 3 days, there's just a fat guy imprint on the ground. There's a slitted foot and then a fat guy imprint where I'm like, cool, I'm glad for a week I get to see my failure in front of me.
Right. What? It's a constant reminder. God, I gotta slip in more diets.
Oh, come on.
Why didn't you just make it a snow angel? Why you just lay down there and just go snow angel?
I feel like I was pretty upset at the point.
Yeah,
I feel like this was like day two without power, and I thought, you know what I shouldn't do? Roll around in snow with no power.
That's the whole thing. We couldn't do snow angels because you couldn't go back inside
and
warm up.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Or shower.
Yeah, that's a good point. Unless you had a fireplace. You could, I guess.
That's true.
We had a stove with gas. That was the best we could do to warm up your hands.
Yeah, stove with gas works. No doubt. I had one of those.
Spend a lot of time in the car.
Yep.
Recharging the phone.
I'm just recharging the phone with my heater on full.
With my heater on full. Like, seats are blasting.
It's like Naked and Afraid.
Is that any good?
It's like Naked and Afraid, wearing tons and tons of layers of clothes in Afraid.
Right. Hopefully we will not run into that. But yeah, beautiful weather here, at least right now. Should be getting cold, and we got a lot of stuff to get into today. Last night, got to give him credit. Patrick, you were out there. You left at 5 because you are our engineer for Texas basketball games, and so you can definitely give us what you saw there. Rod, we watched it on TV, and, man, it felt like Texas had control for a lot of this game. Now, there wasn't a ton of separation, but had control. You felt that momentum flip midway through the second half. And I thought Chris Beard nailed it when he said they were more than comfortable getting into a street fight. They wanted to turn this into a street fight. Mm-hmm. If you know anything about Bruce Weber and some of his teams, it's not the biggest shock in the world that they're going to turn that into it. They had some length advantages, but they were going to bring it to Texas. Texas, as that momentum was shifting, answered that, and it looked like you're at a point where, okay, you know, a bucket or two, and this thing's over with, and Kansas State wouldn't go away. This is, guys, this was a really, really tough one to lose. We talked about the schedule being backloaded in terms of strength. Texas hasn't played Baylor yet. They got two more games against Baylor, two against Kansas, two against Tech. And we also said Kansas State, even though they haven't played very well, they're coming off of a double-digit win against Texas Tech.
They're scrappy.
They're scrappy.
That's the term you use.
Right.
They also, in Big 12 play, hadn't had all their guys yet because of COVID. This is the second game with all their people. They've won the two with everybody on the roster in Big 12 play.
They have. So they're 10-7 now. They look a lot better than 10-7. But, Rod, I'll start with you. This is a game, because of that schedule and the crowds lifting you up, You got to find a way to get that. Is it a must win? There are no must wins right now, but the strength of schedule is going to kill Texas. They got to do some damage in Big 12 play, and this was a game in this type of league at home. You got
to
win.
Yeah, there was an argument to be made that it was the easiest remaining game on their Big 12
TCU
schedule.
TCU would be right there.
That's what I'm saying. So it's unfortunate because they were right there. It's a narrative that we've become accustomed to when it comes to Texas basketball. Their defense is good enough to keep them in every game, but these ice cold stretches that they hit where they just, they really do, they go cold. It's like a doomsday drought they go on offensively. And we saw it down the stretch here in the second half. The best, I don't know if it's best stat, but it is a kind of a mind-blowing stat that only three players scored in the second half for Texas.
Yeah.
That was it. I mean, in the final 17 minutes, only two players were able to score.
And we know Marcus Carr was one.
And Marcus Carr was on fire. I mean,
that was great to see. We talked about that.
It was great to see. I think they had two stretches of three-plus minutes without scoring in that game with K-State. One of them, of course, down the stretch to end the game, and of course that's what lost you the game. You're in the clutch, you had a chance, the game was out there for somebody to take it, and unfortunately for you, K-State went and took it you at home.
And I was planning on coming in if they get a bucket or if Timmy Allen hits a free throw or two. I'm planning on coming in and saying, man, Texas won this game at the line. They got to the line and they hit their free throws. They end up 21-26. Those last two were really big. Timmy Allen missed it. Timmy Allen played really well. I mean, easily the player of the game is Marcus Carr for Texas. Timmy Allen's right there, though.
Yeah.
Love his mid-range game, especially in, I think it was first half, where he's just hitting 15, 17 footers.
Five of six.
Man, he looked comfortable. This was the Marcus Carr that we had heard about and saw at Minnesota, who had a bunch of 30-point games, had a 40-point game against Nebraska, and they may have spread, or gone ISO a little bit too late with him, but spread the floor and let him work when you've got someone who's that hot.
Yeah.
And spread the floor. They didn't spread the floor. They didn't.
You got to.
They just ran ISO in a box because there's still a guy on the wing to his right. Why is there a guy on the wing to your right on that? Because now let's help defense, and he can't go to his right the full way.
Spoken like a true guy or a guy who watches a lot of NBA every night.
Well, no, look, if your entire offense in the second half is ISO ball, then play ISO ball.
Then do it. If you're going to
cannot
it, do
play
it,
ISO ball,
I'm with you.
Because all you're doing is making it harder for that guy. And so I'm hoping this is, look, it is a bad point for them in this season, but you're hoping this is the turning point. This is the turning point of, okay, guys, we can play defense, but if we don't get an offense, and if our offense is, let's just see who's hot. We need Andrew Jones to put up 25. We need Marcus Carr to put up 25 to be in games, not to win games, to be in games. Then this team is a middle of the road Big 12 team.
Right.
They're not a winning team if that's your offense.
Which is that may be who they are. And
but I don't.
That's not a shock for us because we've been saying that. I mean,
it's one of those three.
Non-conference, we got that feeling.
It was Andrew Jones, Marcus Carr, and Courtney Ramey. You need two of the three to be on. And if only one of the three is on, then the other contributors, even Timmy Allen, it's not enough, right?
No.
So they need both. They need two of those three.
Yeah.
Night in and out.
And it's crazy because you sit there and you say Texas was momentum. Texas just looked like the better team for the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of those shots that K-State hit are not good shots. They're hitting threes from 5 feet behind the line, not set.
Right.
So if you're hitting those, yeah, you're going to be in a game.
And really their offense was, certainly for the first half, was we're going to put the ball on the floor, as we like to call it, dribble drive. When did dribble drive come around? I've been watching basketball for 40
driving.
Years.
It's just driving.
Yeah, it's just, you're adding, well, I think it became you're adding a word. You can't drive and not dribble.
No, you worst can in the NBA. And I think that might be where it came from.
Well done, well done.
Yeah, I think dribble driving came when LeBron started taking picking the ball up at the three-point line.
Right, exactly.
But, in the basket.
But they were just driving, and they were gonna get to the lane and need to get fouled. But they finished a lot of stuff early. But a lot of those threes, you're right, especially later on, were...
And I'll give K-State credit that their big men are not scorers. Their big men, very little in the offensive game. They're there to rebound. But what they did is they put bodies on Texas defenders. So Texas rim protectors a lot of time were standing 3 feet away from the basket because they're basically getting boxed out while the guy's driving to the hoop. So there is no rim protection anymore. It is one-on-one complete way to the hoop. Texas doesn't do that. And, hey, maybe we should. Like, that's there's just so many things in this when you watched it and you went – their offense is gym. Like, that's you can go down to the park and play that basketball on offense. And the fix is, the problem is, there's too much talent on this offense to say they're a middle-of-the-road team. Like, it's not that there's not anybody who can score on this team. There's seven guys on this team who can score consistently. But they're not using them in the right way. When you see Askew looking at a three, looking to pass it, and then shooting it because he's still open, go take the shot. When you see Andrew Jones faking seven threes at the end of this game and not taking them, take the shot. We're not getting a better one. Because once they close in on you, you're trying to drive past them, but the floor is getting too put together. You're going to have to put up these shots. If you miss a wide-open shot, that's fine. But you have to take the wide-open shots.
Chris Beard's philosophy is only pass up a good shot for a great shot. Guys may be taking that too literally in the sense of looking for the perfect shot.
Right, yeah.
There is no perfect shot. It's just, you know.
What is a good shot? It's a great shot. This is a good shot. This is a great shot.
It's a high percentage shot, yeah, in terms of when you're open and the confidence to shoot it. So, I agree with Patrick in that sense. And I think something else for Texas, if, you know, we know who they are, right? They struggle offensively. They got offensive identity issues. They got to win some of those other battles that we talk about, right? They got to check some of those other columns, those second chance points, the, you know, whether it be offensive rebounds, the turnovers, fast break points, all of those. I think it's 6 of the first 8 points for K-State came up offensive
chance.
Rebounds.
It's second chance.
Second chance points. I mean,
they were living off that to stay in that game early.
Had 12 offensive rebounds, I believe, total, but they had 13 second chance points. You know, when you're an offensive, well, when you're struggling offensively, those are some of the other boxes I think you got to win. Some of the other areas you got to win. Texas is not winning those either.
No, nope. And Timmy Allen's doing a good job of it, but he's the guy who does a good job of it.
He's the junkyard dog. He tries to, yeah.
And he's in right position a lot of times because he's shorter than all these other guys, and he's still getting second chance rebounds because he's putting himself in the right position.
Christian Bishop led Texas with 8 rebounds. Timmy Allen did play really well. Marcus Carr, this was the Marcus Carr we were looking for. Is there? I mean, Texas fans really pissed off right now. They're 3-3. I'm not sure what you were expecting. One, I guess you were underrating Kansas State, but also we've seen this team.
Underrating the Big 12, too.
Yeah, right, but yeah. We've seen this team, yeah, in terms of the 3-3, but just for this one game, I guess the bright spot is, can you take something offensively out of what they did with Marcus Carr? They do need to spread the floor, and if you're going to go that style ball, play that style ball and set it up to where it's actually going to help you out, help other guys out too. Because Marcus Carr will dish, but it was good to see him in. He kind of took this thing over for a little while, and I felt like we're going to be coming in just talking about him. Instead, we're coming in and talking about a game that you just can't lose. And they had it right in front of him. Was the last 3.5 minutes, Rod?
Yeah. Last three, 1 o'clock, to 3:13. Basically, they scored. It was 65-62 at 3:13, Texas, and he didn't score again. That's a 3-minute stretch. And they had another one earlier, 3-minute stretch, where they didn't score either. Those are the ones. I mean, I went back and counted. I counted 12 of them this year so far. And honestly, I didn't even go to every game. I didn't go to blowouts. I only went to games that basically were within 15 points either way.
Yeah.
So I didn't go to games where Texas blew a team out. But in games where are somewhat competitive within 15 points, they've had 12 different stretches of at least three plus minutes without scoring. I mean, that's doomsday.
And when you call a timeout on an offensive possession and then don't run a play, you don't do anything offensively. Why is there a timeout there? Because if it's just setting your defense for afterwards, you're missing half of the game.
Yeah.
And that's where you watch it and you went, I get Marcus Carr's the right hot hand and you want to ride him, but run a play where you get him a screen and you get him something open. Run a true ISO and pull everyone on the other side of the court and say, go and help us. And if they do that, have plays where you have guys sneak out and try and get open under the basket or try
flashing.
And get open. Yeah. But don't just set up an offense where he kind of holds it for a while and then takes a decent shot. I mean, he's been hitting those 15-footers. That's kind of his game, is the back down 15-footer.
Yeah, that was not the shot I wanted there, though.
No, I want to play. I want something to try and get you the right shot, not, hey, well, this is falling at 50%, so let's take a 50% shot with 2 seconds left. So we have zero chance to win. We're down. It's not a tie game. You take that shot with 7-8 seconds on the clock. So if you get it and they rebound, you foul them. There's still a game. You're down one. They hit 2 free throws. You're down 3. You're still in this game. I mean, all of it is just handled so poorly down the stretch offensively. I get it's a defensive team, but if you can't score, I mean, honestly, it's bad. It's very bad that there seems to be no effort on the offensive end other than, well, they're talented offensive players.
These were the issues that if Chris Beard had issues, and I like Chris Beard a lot, but I did mention this that, and this was as we're acquiring guys in the portal. I was like, this is all great. I'm excited about this. I'm optimistic. I'm not going to be the guy who comes in here and don't tweet me, you know, hey, you know, why are you crapping on our party? I'm happy about the party too, but let's also be realistic about we're not bringing in God as head coach here. Yeah. He does have some flaws, and we're seeing those offensively. And this is where Chris Beard, Rob, we talk about it a lot growing on the job. Sark's going to have to. You know, Chris Beard is not a finished product as a coach. Offensively, he's going to have to look at some stuff. I think they're 21, or he's 21 and 20 in Big 12 play since the loss to Virginia in the championship game. So, no Culver, that can change things. There have to be adjustments, because Patrick's right.
Agreed.
I probably don't believe in some of these guys. I'm not going to name them individually like some fanboys do, but Patrick's right. They've got enough scores where their offense should be better than this. They're just trying to find out what pieces and how to actually do that.
Yeah, I think that Chris Beard wants to have an offensive identity. He wants to have, you know, certain things, concepts that they execute really, really well. Maybe that'll be the case later on. Right now, that is not necessarily the case. Right now, you just have guys that, depending on the night, they're either on or they're not.
Yes.
And what it comes down to as a coach, you're going to have to adjust game to game within the Big 12, almost without an offensive identity, being malleable night to night and going, okay, Carr's on. Okay, I got it. All right, we're going to ISO ball with him. Are we going to, you know what I mean? Are we going to set screens
roll,
up? Whatever. Because
Jones and Ramey weren't feeling it last night.
They weren't. They had 10 points combined. They were not. But as we know, Andrew Jones, last couple of games, he was the guy.
He was 40 points.
So you just got, I hate to say it, but you're almost troubleshooting early on in the game to figure out, okay, who's exactly feeling it tonight.
Who's hot?
Who's not? Yeah, who's hot?
But Marcus Carr wasn't hot in the first half.
But yeah, I mean, but you can still, I mean, so I'm just saying.
No, Marcus Carr looked bad. He had turnovers. He looked bad in the first half.
You can adjust it all throughout the game, but, I mean, you got to figure out different ways to manufacture offense. Your defense will keep you in games, but, man, those stretches, those droughts, they are essentially the reason they're losing these games to high-quality competition. Because defense is still, statistically, one of the best in the country.
Yeah, it is. Mark Smith's a good player for them, man. Smith did actually hit the boards really hard, but had 22. And then heading in, we thought their best player, and probably still is Nigel Pack. Pack had 16. Those were really the two guys.
McGurl had a great game.
McGurl came off the bench and had 13 and played really well. And yeah, as you pointed out, they're big guys. But the real thing for me was they were going to come in, match the intensity, which they did in the first half when they had a 6-point lead in Manhattan with 6 guys. And bring that in and do it with some bigger, better bodies. I'll give Texas credit. They actually answered that. It was about finishing, and that is getting back to Rod's point. Last 3.5 minutes, going scoreless is inexcusable.
No, I mean, this is a team where you need to look at and go, we need to score 70 points a game. Look, we're going to hold most teams under 70. So if you say we're going to hold most teams under 70, then if we score 70 a game, we're going to win most of our games. Texas wins most games that they're going to score 70. The problem is they have not been scoring 70, and that it's not an outlandish number to get to. That is not. I mean, if you take shots on hoop that they had, open shots they didn't take, stuff like that, they could have easily put up 75 in this game. Not a problem. And that's the problem, is like you just have to find ways to manufacture points in trying to run offenses. And the big guys, Christian Bishop, Trey Mitchell, not great 3-point shooters. They're open for three because they're not great at it. They can hit some. Trey hit one that was a bank shot.
Yeah.
No. But from 10, 15 feet, actually
count.
Pretty good. So if you say, all right, stop trying to put him in this position where we're spreading the court, but let's run plays where we get these guys shot to 10, 15, and now we're pulling out a defender so we can get a guy to cut underneath, or if the guy does comes right up on him, they can drive the hoop because they're athletic enough and have a good first step. There's ways to do things with this, and the fact that it keeps being, well, one guy's going to get hot, and that will hopefully save us, is the scariest part of this season so far.
But yeah. I think that's who they are, though.
But that cannot be who you are.
Yeah, but
if you want to play, if you want to play Monday basketball,
you can't change who you are midway through the season. I mean, you're at this point, you're getting to the point you got to get deep into Big 12 play. You still want to experiment with the offense. Yep. I'm still doing it right now. They're experimenting. That's going to lose you games. What you need to do is night on night, you need to figure out exactly who's hot, who's not, and then you can build the concepts around them, whether it be your pick and rolls or you want to spread the floor and play iso ball, whatever it is. Because if you try, that's something you got. You're talking about self scouting stuff you got to do in the offseason. These guys aren't going to figure, and they're not going to do that right now during in Big 12 playing the toughest conference in college basketball. Not going to happen. That's unrealistic.
It's also one of the hard things about acquiring all these guys in the portal is that it's hard to do that. I get Rod's point.
That's unrealistic.
You've got to find. What you got to try and do is you got to try and find out what your core is, what you want to do, and then make some slight adjustments with that.
And so I'm not saying we're bringing in an offensive system. The Texas brings in an offensive system where we know where everybody is. And like if you look at the Spurs system where it's set up where everyone's in a spot. It's more, hey, if I put up a fist, Trey, get on the corner, get on the box, corner of the box, set a screen, run across, pick and pop, pick and roll. You've played this since you were five. You know these simple things. That's all I'm saying is adding in plays where we know we're going to run a play. We're coming down and running plays as opposed to come down, pass the ball around for 5 minutes, and then go, oh, there's 7 seconds on the shot clock. We're going to have to force something up. That's more of what I'm saying, not a full offensive rebuild, because you're right. You cannot put in a full offensive rebuild or you're going to have 95 turnovers a game.
Yeah, and I also wonder, as you're recruiting a lot of these guys, and this is just kind of the world we live in, it's been the basketball world for a long time, where you've got to kiss ass, and there's things I want to work on to show the league. And some of that is, if I'm a bigger guy, I need to extend a little bit. I need to get some looks there, even though that may not be the best thing for the team.
Yeah.
And I think guys are having trouble figuring out what their roles are offensively.
There's no question about that. And the rhythm comes and goes. But when it goes, it can't go like that.
Yeah. You need to, when it does go, if you're running the motion offense that he wants to run and it's effective and they're executing it, great. But when you struggle, when you hit that cold spell, when you go ice, baby, all right, when you go vanilla ice, you need to figure out, and that's kind of what Patrick was talking about, when that happens, you need to know, all right, either this is the guy or these are the guys we got to manufacture concepts and plays for, and then they will find a way to either get to the foul line or they will find a way to manufacture some points in offense for us. But that's not happening. The cold stretches are going way too long. And Chris Beard, I mean, he sees it, but unable to kind of remedy the issue as it's happening. And it devolves into them losing games because their defense is, it's almost like Texas football in a sense. And we talked about this yesterday. Texas football offensively was great. That was one of the elite phases for them in the country. Defensively, they were one of the worst in the country. I mean, like 99th, I think, in scoring defense or something. And as good as they were offensively, they were that bad defensively. In Texas, as basketball, as good as they are defensively, they're that bad offensively.
They are. Look, here's the other thing, too. Ramey had some good looks.
He was just off.
He's shooting 38% from beyond the arc. So that's just one of those you just got to say.
A lot of those guys in pregame warmups, when I'm sitting there setting up equipment, a lot of them did not look on before the game. So it was somewhat troubling. And you're like, and they're normally hitting 95%
of these wide open shots.
Yeah, because they're just shooting hoops. Like they're literally just ball pass to him shooting. And it was lower than that. So there was a little bit before the game where you sit there and you're like, I don't know why, but they're just not feeling it right now.
Interesting.
Kansas State wasn't feeling it early. They're, 2-10 from beyond the arc in the first half, and then they got some of those to go, as you talked about, in the second half. But this was a gritty effort and just a really, really tough loss for Texas. Crowd sounded good.
Man, that was probably the loudest it's been in there in a long time. And for this early in the Big 12 conference play, this early in the season, it's great to see the crowd doing it. They did their job. There were sections that stayed up for the last 10 minutes of that game, which is not Texas' way.
No,
it is not what Texas fans do. So I was thrilled to see that, and it was crushing at the end.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Gary Patterson watched everybody staring up at one box. So.
Yeah.
That too.
But. I'm sure you've been looking up there. We're going to get to Gary Patterson and all that coming up at 4 o'clock. Tough loss for the Horns. We'll get back to that coming up at 5. Let's get to the NFL. Cowboys fans, they're feeling worse than Texas basketball fans today. I know for some of you that may be hard to believe, but they definitely are. They got some free agents. Who should they keep? Who do you let go?
Yo, remember yo. Back on the bully when cats used to harmonize like,
yo,
my men and my women, don't forget about the dame. This is not the most the king, yo, it's about a thing,
Welcome back to RBKD. It is a way back rap Wednesday, a old school hip hop hump day right here on RBKD. You can always be a part of the show. Please do hit us up via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. Kevin Dunn at Kevin Dunn 01 in the Twitterverse. And my man Patrick at It's Patrick Davis in the Twitterverse doing a great job DJing a way back rap Wednesday. I like this. A little Lauryn Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Well done.
Give me a year on this.
Very underrated.
98.
I meant
1998.
I meant to guess. Come on.
1998.
I knew it was college.
I figured. Oh, see, I was going to say like your senior, close to my junior, senior year, somewhere like that.
Isn't that funny how, especially with college and high school, I mean, I remember all that, but there's no other. It's like once you get out of that, like everything's just been a blur.
Yeah.
Because it goes by fast, man.
Right. It does.
By fast.
Once there's no more summers.
Yeah.
Like once you're just like, oh, I'm working till the day I die now.
This is what I do.
No. It flies by. Miseducation of Lauryn Hill? Is that what this is?
Yes. I listened to this album the other day. So I was saying, come on, please.
How's the whole album?
It's amazing.
It's a great, all time. It's literally one of the legendary hip hop albums.
Well, I may get the CD out and look at the cover and read through the cover as I'm listening to it.
Okay.
I got to read the special thanks.
Cat is rubbed off on me.
No, it's actually one of those you probably don't need to skip any
One.
I mean, it's supposed to be one of those classic legendary. I haven't listened to it from, cover to cover, if you will, in a while, from start to finish.
It's weird because there's like sketches in between, or the talking points in between, but other than that.
Remember hip hop had that all back in the day. That was like a common thing. Remember Dr. Dre would do it, Snoop would do it all
right
the time.
Right before Lottie Dottie?
Hell, Jay-Z did it a lot. I mean, that became like a common thing to have these little skits in the middle of your hip hop album.
Yeah.
I think even Tupac had a couple, actually. I mean, it was just a thing. I don't even know why it was popular. Now nobody does it really. I don't think anybody does it anymore.
I don't know. I haven't listened to it.
Used to do them all the time.
Well, in the streaming era, it doesn't work.
Yeah, you're right.
Because you're not listening to it from front to back. You'd be like, let me skip past that.
Yeah, that's true. I guess you could make it part of a song and that would make the song would suck after
what
that.
What was the last CD y'all bought?
Oh, that's a great question.
It's local music.
Okay.
I bought it at shows. Okay. I bought CDs at shows.
Yeah, you're a tough one to ask.
I don't remember. I couldn't tell you. That's a great question.
And I don't remember when. It definitely, knowing me, it would have been way past when anyone else was using them.
I remember when I threw away all my CDs.
Whoa!
Like hundreds. Well, I didn't need them anymore. Like, there was nothing you could do with them. There's nothing to do with them.
Charity!
No, nobody, no homeless man wants your CDs.
You don't know that.
You send it to Goodwill, and then they resell them for like $2.
For $2.
And then somebody finds it and goes, oh, I got to have this. And they put it in their house with everything that's too much.
They'll sell them at the GW here in Westlake. Please, nobody wants your CDs.
Not in Westlake, but in other parts.
Right.
No, that's true. All right, let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys, gentlemen. They are in the offseason, officially, unfortunately, for a lot of Cowboys fans. And that means it's time to start thinking about free agency. And the Dallas Cowboys actually have
22.
A ton of different guys who are going to hit free agency.
And more than that, 22 unrestricted.
Unrestricted free agency, because they got the restricted free agents and the different tags on guys. But the I think that the story, kind of the backstory for them in free agency this year is that they're entering the offseason nearly $21 million over the salary cap or the projected salary cap based upon the expected like boosted cap figure of $208 million for 2022 that is per spot track. So they right now are over the salary cap. That's why there are whispers about Amari Cooper and the Cowboys restructuring some deals potentially. So I'll put the question to you, KD. Let me give you the list of free agents really quickly, too.
Okay.
Let me just read these off, and then you guys think about which one of these free agents I'll give you three that you got to prioritize. Like, got to have these guys back. Got to sign these guys. Dorrance Armstrong, Brian Anger, the punter, Noah Brown.
Who's a Pro Bowler.
Is it really?
Anger was, yeah.
Oh, there you go. Noah Brown, the wide receiver. Maurice Kennedy, the cornerback. Corey Clement, the running back. Michael Gallup, the wide receiver, who is currently dealing with an injury. Randy Gregory, the defensive end. Malik Hooker, the safety. Demonte Kazee, the safety. Jayron Kearse, at safety, too. Jake McQuaid, the long snapper. Keanu Neal, linebacker. Ty Nasecki at offensive tackle. Dalton Schultz at tight end. Jeremy Sprinkle at tight end. Malik Turner at wide receiver. Brent Urban at defensive line. Leighton Vander Esch, LVE, at linebacker, is up as well. Carlos Watkins at D-tackle. Connor Williams, offensive guard. Cedric Wilson, one of your favorites.
Yes.
Receiver. I'm assuming Cedric Wilson is going to be toward the top of your list.
You had him on a one-year, $2 million deal.
A mercenary deal.
You re-sign him. And I don't think you – I mean, this is not going to be like Randy Gregory, where it's going to be really depend on just how much he wants to cash in. I think Gregory wants to cash in right now. I can understand that. So Gregory would be on that list and is on that list. It's all depending about how realistic he can be in – what you can really get him for, because he may go cash in somewhere else.
Yeah, Randy Gregory would be at the top of my list just because I think he, and usually you don't get this, guys, I understand that, but I think he would be willing to give you a hometown discount because of how loyal Jerry Jones has been to him over time. So at least try to play that card with him. And also, you know, I think that you should try to, I think you might get a nice bargain price for Randy Gregory. I got to look at the free agent market of defensive ends.
Mm-hmm.
That could help you, too. I haven't seen that yet. So
it's a valuable commodity.
Yes, exactly. He's a pass rusher. Exactly. So he's going to be valuable. But he's got a baggage
that
he's carrying with him, which always is going to deflate his value or decrease his value. So I think if you're the Cowboys, Jerry Jones, you got to put him. I would have him in my top three. I would definitely have Randy Gregory in my top
three. What about Cedric Wilson, guys? And I'm also looking at value here. I'm looking at you're not going to keep Gallup. You may end up trading Cooper. You've got CeeDee Lamb. Cedric Wilson is the starting receiver in this league.
Yeah, for the right price. You definitely
for the right price, exactly.
Yeah, if someone comes out and says, we got to get him, but I don't think in this free agent market for wide receivers, he's going to get that price.
No.
It's the deepest position in football.
I'm talking two-year, $16 million, $15 million, something like that.
Gallup's the one who's going to try to break the bank, and he should, especially after coming off an injury.
But I think Gallup, you're looking at about 8 to 10 a year for Gallup.
I don't know if the Cowboys would be willing to pay that.
Maybe even less than for Cedric Wilson there.
Yeah.
Cedric Wilson is way cheaper than Gallup.
No, he is, but I was trying to get what those numbers are exactly.
He will be
cheaper than Gallup. There's no question about that.
Specifically? I don't know.
Specifically.
I agree with Patrick. I think, I've already said forever, I think wide receiver is the deepest position in football. I don't think either one of those guys demand a ton of money, so maybe you can try to keep Gallup. I think Gallup wants a longer term. You know, if you're going to try to keep Gallup, you got to be thinking that, three or four steps ahead, then maybe you are moving Amari Cooper.
Yes.
And maybe you figure Gallup's going to be cheaper in the long term than Amari Cooper is right now, then we can either move that deal, trade him, get something back, and then CeeDee Lamb and Gallup are our future at wide receiver.
If they re-sign Gallup and Wilson, Amari Cooper is going to be packaged.
No doubt. Well, that's a great point. Reading the tea leaves.
I don't see any way that they keep Cooper and Gallup. I don't think that Gallup wants to play wide receiver three anymore, too. I don't think he wants to stay there if they go, you're still number three. Yeah. Why would he go? And he go, I could be a one in some places.
That's a great point.
They're going to put me as a one, and you want to put me as a three? Yeah,
you can be a one with the Texans.
Well, they got Brandon Cooks.
Yeah.
Here too.
He wants to play in the league.
You could be a one in Baltimore. You're ahead of everybody in Baltimore.
What about Dalton Schultz, guys?
I wouldn't have him in my top three.
I wouldn't either.
Just because you got Blake. What's Blake Jarwin's situation?
Blake Jarwin's not a free agent.
No, I'm saying, do we know contract-wise how long you have him
great question.
On the roster, I mean. I'd like Dalton Schultz, though, real, but I don't think he – to me, it'd be Gregory, and I would attack those wide receivers, one of those, and depending on, like I said, how you want to approach the Amari Cooper situation, I would either – I probably would be looking to sign Gallup and Cedric Wilson.
It looks like Jarwin –
Amari Cooper.
So. Has two more years on him for roughly $5 million a year.
All right, you don't. Okay. Yeah, Schultz, if you want to give us a deal. But.
If he wants to give you a deal. Because he's got good stats. Oh, he's got some decent stats that he may try to hit the free agent market and somebody may be willing to overpay for
him. And I know we have fun with this, but hey, it fits here. I guess this stereotype was created for some reason. He's not super twitchy, but he finds ways to get open.
Yeah.
He's got good hands. You know, he's one of those guys that doesn't jump off the screen, but then you watch him a lot and go, this guy just gets open.
I'll flip the script on you since you're talking about tight ends. I'll go with their tight end stopper in my top three. I might put Jaron Kearse there.
I was going to ask you about Kearse and Keanu Neal.
Because you think about what they've been trying to do.
I'm with you on Kearse. Kearse is in my top three.
Okay, so think about what they've been trying to do at safety. The Cowboys always believe at safety they can get a bargain basement deal. They try to get these kind of fire sale deals, these one-year mercenary deals at safety, whatever they can find on the free agent market. Jaron Kearse is probably not going to demand a ton out there, but he was one of your success stories with your experimental approach to the safety position because they don't like to draft safety really high. They believe they can find value at safety on the free agent market, and that's why they got Malik Hooker and DeMonte Kazee and all those guys. But Jaron Kearse is probably the best story out of that group. He missed just three tackles all season long. Finished eighth among safeties with 83 tackles, 3.2% missed tackle rate, second best among safeties with at least 25 tackles on the season. He had 10 tackles for loss or no gain. That was tied for third best among safeties, and he had 11 quarterback pressures from just 39 pass rush snaps, more pressures than his first five seasons combined. He under Dan Quinn's system, he really thrived. That would be in my top three.
Which also kind of plays into this, because is this going to be Dan Quinn's system?
That also is a great point. That is a very valid point. We do
so
not know that.
For guys like that. I'm with you on Kearse, though. What about two linebackers? LVE, who did play pretty well as this year went along, and then Keanu Neal, the former safety. I mean, you probably keep one of those guys, right? But they bring different things to the table.
Yeah, they do, because Dan Quinn brought Keanu Neal in as a guy that can be not a hybrid, but at least he could cover linebackers on the
former
field,
safety.
Work well in space. Yeah, and Leighton Vander Esch is different. I think you can get Leighton Vander Esch on the cheap, and I think Leighton Vander Esch, I think he'd be willing to sign another mercenary one-year prove-it deal.
Man, I'm glad Rod's not the agent for all these guys. Getting everyone on the cheap here.
Well, I think he would, right?
You got limited time to make this.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But
maybe he would. I mean, a lot of this also is how much love are they getting from the other 31 teams.
Very true.
And I think part of it's going to be if they keep Dan Quinn, because I think some of these guys will want to play in a defense that's doing well. Then, all right, it's kind of unproven what we're going to have. So if you keep Dan Quinn, you may get a couple better prices. Maybe somebody like Randy Gregory might do a favorable deal where he doesn't take a lot of money up front in the first couple years, lets you get out of salary cap trouble, and then it's backloaded deal.
No, it's a great point because, honestly, three of these guys, to Patrick's point, three of these guys, he brought in himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he recruited them when he got here. Keanu Neal, yep. Kazee, and Kearse. He literally was recruited those guys. He zeroed in on those targets. So, hell, they may decide if he does leave, I am following Dan Quinn because he likes me.
And I mean, so, I think there's also a big part of looking into this is what is your draft strategy? Is your draft strategy, let's go get O-lineman? Is your draft strategy to find another, another important position on the offensive end? Or are you going mostly defense in this draft? And if you're going mostly defense, you're going to let a couple of these guys go and hope that you get lucky with another Micah Parsons or you get lucky with another Trayvon Diggs or something like that, which I think you're probably going to go mostly defensive in this draft.
Speaking of, I do think they need to probably go best player available because it's worked for them
right
away. But yeah, the crux of the draft,
yeah, I agree with that.
We'll have a much better idea, speaking of reading tea leaves, once we kind of see where they are with free agency, to where if a lot of these defenders are gone.
Stephen Jones said, don't expect big splashes from them. And much like the last offseason, there were no big splashes.
These guys leave.
Yes, I'm saying like they were nice moves, but he said, no, he hinted that they like what they have already. When he spoke to the media. So
we are the Horn, and we've mentioned a bunch of names. I mean, hell, we didn't hit Luke Gifford, but we hit a lot of names before we hit Connor Williams. Give me the percentage chance that he's back. Are we at 10?
I'm going to go 20, just because I got some love for him.
I want to say 52%, but I feel like that's not the right answer.
It's not.
It's
way too high.
It's a low blow.
Way too high. But yeah, Connor Williams is a free agent, too. Carlos Watkins is a name. Dorrance Armstrong, who at times made some plays, but those guys don't feel like they're necessities. to bring back. And Malik Hooker's probably gone too, right?
Yeah, Malik Hooker. I mean, he was fine for you. He was a good player for you.
He was fine.
But, I don't think you would prioritize him by any means. I mean, Jayrun Kearse, like I said, if I'm going to prioritize a safety, he's the guy. You can go find another safety that'll sign a one-year prove-it deal with you who probably has a higher upside, just like you thought with Malik Hooker this offseason. That's one of those positions.
I think Malik Hooker and Connor Williams are both guys that there's a coach out there who will say, the talent's there, the physical's there, I can fix them.
Oh, Connor Williams is going to sign somewhere.
Oh, yeah, and I think he'll get paid decently to sign because he has the natural gifts.
And remember, he's technically listed as their backup center, so there could be some versatility there.
I remember that experiment.
But that experiment didn't work. I was going through their depth chart last week, I saw that, and I thought, man, Biotis has a 64 PFF grade and has not been great, but they got no one at center.
They got to remake. They got to rebuild that O line. It's becoming more and more apparent.
If Linderbaum's there, take him. Trust me on that.
Yeah, like this is the center from Iowa.
Yeah, he's the best Iowa offensive lineman I've ever seen.
He is a
that's saying something.
His motor. He's got a base like a JJ Watt at center.
He does.
He's got a motor that is crazy.
Former defensive lineman.
Okay, that makes sense.
And actually made the flip. I'm going to give you two things that make sense. Former defensive lineman.
We're watching him.
And an All American high school wrestler.
Okay, because his leverage he's leveraged. But he's aggressive. Aggressive.
Like, he is.
It's fun to watch him, actually, as a center, which is weird to say.
By the way, highest graded rookie offensive lineman ever? Creed Humphrey with his 93.8 or 94 right now.
Nice nugget.
There you go. Like so you can rebuild quickly there. Let's get, speaking of rebuilding, we'll talk a little Spurs. Patrick will be happy about that. We'll get into that trade. Also, a Texans coaching update.
That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police.
Hip Hop Wednesday here on the Horn. It's RBKD. Get to hornfm.com. We're live, we're local, we are digital, and the Horn app will allow you to listen to us anywhere you're at. Who's this, Patrick?
KRS-One.
Oh, God.
Old school.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really bringing me back here. All right, let's talk a little basketball here. Spurs are part of a three-team trade. When we talk Spurs, probably when we talk NBA, we're going to be going to Patrick Davis. You are a huge Spurs fan. Before we even get to the trade, Murray has been fantastic. I didn't realize he was that close to averaging a triple-double.
Yeah, he's been killing it this year.
So you're obviously rebuilding, but that's something to build on.
Oh, yeah, because I think you're at a point with the Spurs right now where they have Derek White, DeJounte Murray, and Lonnie Walker Jr. So you have three really good guards that are all very young. You've already paid Derek White and DeJounte Murray a second contract. Lonnie Walker's coming up on one, so you're trying to figure out your guard play. And so there's been a lot of talk of one of those guys getting traded this year. DeJounte Murray is putting himself in the he's not tradable category.
Yeah.
With the way his play this year. So
I've watched him play, and he looked really good. I talked about him on the radio last couple of years, and like, this guy's maybe someone to build on. I didn't realize he had gotten that good. Saw him maybe a week ago, and then was looking at the numbers. Rod, he is a rebound and an assist or two assists away from averaging a triple-double.
He's been good for a while, though.
Yeah, he has. Yeah.
Possibly the best defender at his position.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like, best all-in-ball defender in his position. So it's not just that he's putting up great numbers. He's also an amazing defender. He's very long, quick. So
And he's just continuing to ascend,
just
right? This
better.
Is not something that just had a breakout year this year. He's been kind of trending in his direction.
Yeah. So we're seeing him still go up, because that's always you always worry about with a young basketball player is what's the cap? And when you're seeing the numbers he's putting up this year, you realize, oh, we haven't hit the cap yet.
Yeah, with this dude.
So we got a three-team trade, and Forbes was acquired. Man, that's a lot of money to get Forbes.
Not that
Forbes. I saw that. I thought, whoa.
He's money from three-point range, but not that guy.
Tell us about the trade here.
I'll just read this from Adrian Wojnarowski really quick. The Denver Nuggets are acquiring San Antonio Spurs guard Bryn Forbes in a three-way deal with the Celtics. The Nuggets will send Bol Bol and PJ Dozier to the Celtics, and the Spurs will acquire, now I'm definitely going to screw this up, Juancho Hernan Gomez?
Yeah, and you just call him Juan. He just won. I mean, he's Juancho, but it's won.
And Denver's 2028 second round pick. A Spurs fan.
Bol Bol, by the way. So,
the second round pick going from the Nuggets to the Spurs protected, and the San Antonio Spurs receive some money in the
trade.
They
get some money and a second round pick, which is kind of the bigger part of this deal for them right now. You're hoping Hernan Gomez is going to turn out to be an okay player. But he's got $7 million on his deal this year. He's got another $7 next year, but they can basically get out of it without guaranteed money. Mm. So if he works out for them, great. If not, they'll get rid of him at the end of this year.
Nice. Okay.
But, yeah, he's just a versatile.
And it makes sense for Denver, though.
Yeah, so Denver gets Brent Forbes. And it makes sense for the Spurs. They weren't going to keep Brent Forbes. So he went to the Bucks last year, ended up not making that rotation down the stretch at the playoffs. He was a big part of the Spurs before he left. But they're just, again, we just talked about Lonnie Walker, DeJounte Murray, and Derek White all play the same flex 1-2 position. Brent Forbes is a 2. He's not really big enough to play 3. Not a great defender. So he doesn't, you know, he falls out of Pop's favor a lot. He had 2 DNPs in the last couple games when everybody's healthy. So if you're not going to play the guy, then go get some value for him somewhere else. They end up getting, you know, a second round pick, and they get a guy that fits. They need that guy more, a 6'9 guy who can play 3 and D, which is, I mean, that's how Pop will love anybody who plays 3 and D. So it'll be interesting to see how he does on the Spurs, but I think it's just one of those, all right, let's kind of move some stuff around. It's interesting because...
Do you think they're done?
No. Because I still don't see them keeping all 3 of those guards throughout the year. I'd love it if they could, but I just don't see how it happens. And then you also remember Zach Collins, who they signed on a discount deal.
He's here, huh?
He is playing in Austin right now.
Yeah, he's in Austin.
So he is in rehab trying to come back. Once you bring him back, now that puts them with 3 centers. Jock Landale, the guy who came over from Australia, is starting to play it a lot better. So now you're wondering, do you keep Pirtle, who's been playing great for the Spurs, but you keep Pirtle, Landale, and Zach Collins, 3 guys who are all playing center.
Yeah.
Do you get rid of one of them as well? And then there's still rumors about Sabonis, that they're interested in Sabonis. Miles Turner just got hurt, but he was in those rumors as well. So you could see something else happen. It's the Spurs, though. They are the most quiet organization for any type of trades.
And are these trades just to build around their young talent, or is these trades to kind of position them to try to free up to make a bigger move?
I think they're still sitting with cap space. You don't want to lose all your cap space at once, but it's the Spurs.
Yeah,
I mean, how many major free agent acquisitions?
I mean,
the guy they got this year was Doug McDermott. Was one of their bigger acquisitions this season, which he's a fine player, but if that's your guy, then you can find that cap space.
Good point.
So it's more a question of you're probably not getting anybody big. So if you get the right trade, you want to put yourself in a bad situation. However, the Spurs are also right now in that limbo of, well, you're not bad enough to get a top pick, and you're also not good enough to get into a real playoff contention.
The middle class of the NBA.
So I think they're trying to figure out where they're going to sit, but they have enough young talent that they're not going to fall all the way down to rebuild.
You'd rather be
no upward mobility.
You'd rather be dirt poor. Yeah, you don't say that in real life.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, I'll take middle class over, you know.
Yeah, no, you, because then you would get the top
nothing,
pick.
Nothing, but yeah.
Yeah, middle class NBA, it sucks, trust me, to be in a middle class NBA team, because the Rockets were there for a little while, too.
Right.
It's not good.
And then also, Thad Young will be gone. That's the other one.
Okay.
Thad Young will get traded because he's like 35. Why do you want to be on this team with all these 21-year-old kids?
To teach them.
Just tired of being the old man in the locker room.
Come on, old man. Get out of here.
Hey, Rod, quickly, Texans interviewing with Rams OC, I believe.
Kevin O'Connell.
That's it.
I believe they're going to interview him, and he's been there for a little while. He's actually been one of the few coaches to stick around.
Yeah,
which
scares
Sean McVay. Which I don't know if that's good or bad.
You got the Sean McVay effect,
All you need is a year with Sean McVay, and you can go be a head coach somewhere.
10 minutes.
Which,
with
by the way, I think what Matt LaFleur went. He was a year with him, right? Was it not? Anyway, yeah. So that actually is. I don't really get what's going on with the Texans and their coaching. Interviews, but I think more of it, I talked to a friend of mine in the league, and he said, you know, all these guys they're interviewing while everybody's getting head coaching interviews isn't to actual fill the head coaching vacancy. He said sometimes it's just trade secrets they want to acquire potentially. Sometimes they're actually doing background on another candidate that for some other reason. So they know this guy's close to them, so they want to do more background on a candidate they actually do have in mind for the position. So he said there are different reasons why they could be doing
this. So hold
this.
On. So they bring you in and to talk about someone you know?
Well, no. They end up getting to that. They interview you, of course. Then
right.
They end up getting to what they really want, which
actually came over to me to talk to me and just kept on talking about Rod the whole time.
Pretty much. I mean, that can happen.
What about your friend Rod?
Or sometimes he also
Rod's
said
married and he's a bad guy.
That they're bringing in guys to fill other positions potentially on the coaching staff when they do hire the head coach, like the Texans with Jared Mayo. They may want him to be the DC or something like that. So he said it's not always just, oh, they're looking at this guy as the head coach. You're like, that guy's had, you know, Hines Ward interviewed with the Texans.
Okay.
I'm not going to hire Hines Ward to be the head coach.
Well, but he might be a great. You didn't need to say it that way.
Well, it may be a great player ops guy, yeah, and right. Then kind of work his way up in the front office because he just hasn't had any experience.
And Mayo, like you said, is kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
Rod, they hired David Culley. They could hire Hines Ward.
Yeah.
All right. You
don't
yes.
put anything past right, Kyle
great
McNair.
Point, great point. I take it back.
Do you know Jack Easterby? All right, we're one in. We got three to go. We'll get back to to Texas football because we saw a guy at the Texas basketball game last night that got Texas fans pretty excited, probably about as excited as Marcus Carr got him. Got some Arch Manning news, and Texas still looking at the portal.